Protecting us from the masses, the sound almost overwhelms us. Welcome to the Atheist Experience. We are live. Today is Sunday, April 14th, 2019. I'm your host, Matt Delaney. Joining this week, Don Baker.
Hey, good to be here.
It's been a while since we've done
this. Yeah, yeah.
You have something of a failure, perhaps, today, kind of?
I do.
That's good. We'll get to that. A couple of kind of quick announcements. So there's this other show that the Atheist Community of Austin does a little earlier in the day. I don't know, maybe one or two of you might have heard of it, called Talk Heathen. And I've been on it a couple times, you know, because you want to help them out. We're all part of one family here. And so Eric and Jamie were on the show today, and they're like, hey, we're going to the American Atheist Convention, and we're taking Matt with us. Would you guys like to donate some money? And then they raised like $2,000, which is going to help with gas and hotels. And then Eric came in. I recorded it on video in case he tries to deny it, where he's like, take that. So, okay, we will take that.
He threw down the gauntlet. Yep.
We are here from 4:30 p.m. Central until 6:15 so that we can match the amount of time they did. But I don't actually want to wait all the way till 6:15. So if you guys could just go ahead and donate both in the YouTube live chat or via PayPal and other things from the Atheist Community of Austin. None of this money goes to me. None of it, definitely none of it goes to Eric and Jamie. This money goes to the Atheist Community of Austin because we at the American Atheist Convention are going to be doing a live version of Talk Heathen, followed immediately by a live version of the Atheist Experience with myself and Phil Session. And you can find out more about the American Atheist Convention by going to atheists.org, the 2019 National Convention in Cincinnati, Ohio, Easter weekend. That is next weekend. I mean, we're hitting the road. We're driving. We love the people who are coming out to see us. We love the people who are going to the convention, even if they didn't want to see us. And we appreciate all the support. But since I was – the gauntlet was thrown down, mm-hmm. I would like to show that, yes – as always, on rare occasions when we have something to actually push that is worthwhile, that people support, the Atheist Experience fan base comes through. So come on through. If we hit like 2,000 in 5 minutes, cool. Then they'll stop doing that, take that stuff. I mean, that would just be fun. But other good news, after this program's over, they're going to be airing another 20-minute episode of Atheist Vanguard. And you can find out more about the Atheist Community of Austin by going to atheist-community.org or visiting any of our social media pages, including access there to the magazine that we're now producing, which got some great content in it, to go with the 9+ programs that the ACA is now producing.
I'm a regular contributor now.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff.
Uh-huh. And American Atheists used to be here in Austin. They were started here in Austin.
Madeline Murray O'Hare was here. She died here, or close enough to here.
Yeah.
And then they moved the headquarters to Cranston, New Jersey, where my friend Nick Fish is now the president of American Atheists. We'll be all hanging out at the convention. And really, that's all I have to do at the convention is like Saturday afternoon, get up and answer questions and interact with people. So the rest of the time, I'm going to be shooting interviews, hanging out, probably drinking a bit. So come up and say hi. It always bugs me. So let me reiterate this. One last time, I'll go somewhere and do a thing, and then somebody will email and say, oh, I was there at the event, but I was afraid to come up and talk to you. Why?
Life is short, man.
I'm not that terrifying. I promise. We can just hang out and talk. So, yeah, if you see me, come up, say hi. And if I'm rude, tell people that. if I have to go do something and I'm like, hey, I'll get back to you later, but I really got to run, then just trust me, I'm being honest, and I love to hang out with people.
Matt actually enjoys being called on his shit, so.
Yeah. How do you get better if you don't do that? One last note for me on a personal level. Last time I was on the show, I talked about getting my 50th birthday card and went into a long rant about that. Nothing has changed, and I don't expect to change. I feel fine. There's been an incredible outpouring of support from people who are going through those similar situations, and that's the reason I wanted to bring it up, because I know that there are people out there who deal with that stuff on a regular basis. I heard from my parents, we're still going to talk. We're just not going to talk about religion. But for those people who think that I'm incredibly sad over this, I'm not. Getting it off my chest in the show was the thing that, okay, this puts a nail in the last 50 years and things will change going forward, to the point where I got a text message from my mom to let me know she had previously had surgery on her tongue, and she sent a message to say that she saw the doctor and she wasn't going to have surgery on her tongue, and it was praise the Lord. And I said, I'll praise the scientists and the doctors, but I'm glad you're not having surgery. So now they know pretty much if they send me religious stuff, they get Matt from the Atheist Experience replying. And anything else, then they get their son, because that's the only time they deserve them.
Okay. Good luck with that, Matt.
It's fine.
Hopefully it'll work.
I don't know. Did I miss any announcements? I'm sure Mark will hit me if I missed an announcement. But we'll go ahead and let Don start with some new information on religious freedom bills here in Texas.
Yes, that's right. We have the Texas legislature in action, and that's usually a bad thing. And today is the 63rd.
It's only every year and a half.
Yeah, 63rd failure show, if you're keeping track. So the Texas legislature is considering a number of bills allegedly to restore freedoms allegedly lost to the religious. Bills are being introduced also at the state level, all throughout the United States. And so this is not just a Texas thing. This is all over. And it's under the umbrella of something called Project Blitz. And if you haven't heard about that, that's a bit of an ongoing, the Borg have assembled their troops and they're marching. One of the things they're doing is they're creating a lot of In God We Trust bills and plastering In God We Trust everywhere. And partly that's a litmus test to make so that people who vote against it or get to be singled out somehow. Another part of it is religious liberty bills. A lot of these are drawing largely from the report and analysis on religious freedom measures impacting prayer and faith in America, 2017 version by the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation. And I've already posted a link of this on our blog under today's topic. And I highly recommend looking at it because it is kind of the marching orders for a lot of these bills and the thinking behind it. I want to focus mostly on Senate Bill 17 here in Texas, which would allow state license holders like lawyers, health professionals, and counselors to serve clients based on their religious beliefs without any adverse reactions from licensing boards. And this is copied largely from page 95 of the CPCF report I just mentioned. And it could have, and there's a lot of heat and frustration with this. A lot of folks are claiming that this will potentially allow discrimination against gays or those seeking contraceptives. And unfortunately, it was passed by the state Senate a couple weeks ago and is moving on to the House. And so it's got some legs and it's moving. Some of the other bills, by the way, I posted a link to all the bills as part of Dan Patrick's agenda. State Bill 15 removes ordinances currently in place to protect LGBT residents from discrimination in the workplace. There's a bit of a power grab going on in Texas where they're trying to tamp down on a lot of local laws and consolidate power at the state level.
15. Is this 17 for both of them?
No. 15 is about the professions.
Okay.
And that's mostly the topic today, but also they have 15, and they also have various abortion restrictions and one voter suppression bill and the typical things you might find from a Republican legislature.
Is it just me or the CPRF, the Congressional – or CPCRF, the Congressional Prayer Caucus
– Forum.
Forum. Is it just me or is it weird that that's even a thing? Like, I fully acknowledge that people don't have to check their religion at the door. You get to continue your beliefs, but you shouldn't be advocating for your beliefs in your professional capacity. So, like, if the governor wants to pray, the governor can pray. If the governor wants to get together at a church and pray, he can do that. If the governor wants to get all his friends together and pray for the end of the drought, like Perry did, he can do that. But what he shouldn't be able to do is, in his official capacity, say, as governor, I want everybody to pray, which is what he did, which is why there was a problem. And so to me, it seems like if Congress members want to pray, they can pray. But to have an official Congressional Prayer Caucus seems to me to be a codifying of religion from the outset. And now all the reports that come from them are even more dubious than I would have thought before.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, and it's creepy that this report is turned into so many different potential laws around the nation. Right? It's
so. What are they doing this time?
Well, so there's this the State Bill 17, which has to do with you know, the ability of lawyers, healthcare professionals, and counselors to serve clients. And, you know, this could potentially allow counselor to talk to a young gay person and, you know, encourage them to commit suicide because God, you know, thinks they're defective or whatever. Or it could be contraceptives are withheld based on the potential religious convictions of a healthcare professional. And so basically it's a mechanism for people to put their religious beliefs ahead of their professional duties. And so that's a concern. So a lot of these so-called religious freedom things are really just Christians wanting the freedom to shit on others. These bills have nothing to do about the freedom of the victims not to be persecuted. Their freedoms don't matter at all. And that's already the case where we already have a lot of laws and such structured to favor religious belief over religious belief, disbelief, or other forms of secular belief systems or whatever. Religion tends to get preference in a lot of ways. Another aspect of a lot of these laws is this idea of a sincerely held religious belief.
I actually like the way that they phrased it that way.
Oh, really? I hate it.
How do you prove that it's sincere? If somebody argues, I'm doing this based on my sincerely held religious belief, please prove that it's sincere. You can't do that.
Well, that's my complaint with it is the Supreme Court in the Hobby Lobby case ruled that religious beliefs can be anything whatsoever. And it's impossible to verify or even test religious belief. And
yeah. So you can, this is why in theological circles, there's a recognized difference between orthodoxy, which is the right belief, and orthopraxy, which is the right practice. And so you can go to church all the time, but that doesn't tell anybody what's actually in your head. And so the sloppiness of this, the part that you don't like, I understand why you don't like it because, oh my gosh, there's no way to prove this. But that is, I think, the point of attack. To say you came in here and you said that you don't want to provide contraceptives to someone who had them prescribed by a doctor, and that's your sincerely held religious belief you claim. How can we know that it's sincere? And they might say, well, because I'm refusing to do it. Well, you're refusing to do the action, but that doesn't tell us what the motivation is. And at the end of the day, if you can't do the job that you've signed up to do because of your religious beliefs, you should not take the job. You should not be allowed to continue doing the job.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, the sincerely held religious belief really doesn't mean anything. It's whatever you want.
It's my sincerely held religious belief that these laws should be scrapped.
Absolutely.
And that anybody who tries to impose these laws should be removed from public office, and tarred and feathered. That's my sincere religious belief.
And it's my sincerely held religious belief that any belief about religion is a religious belief. Anyway, so we can get in on the act too, I believe. So the Texas Religious Freedom Restoration Act of a couple years ago, which is a terrible law, and other RFRA laws around the states also have this phrase, and this is a common thing these days. And in my mind, this is nothing more than a religious power grab. I'm religious. I get to do whatever I want. And their religious beliefs are evil and they know it. And the reason is if they had to justify their beliefs by pointing at the Bible, they would have to say, these gay men, you don't get to shit on them. You have to kill them. That's what the Bible says. And the Bible authors never even realized that lesbians existed, so they must be okay.
They wrote about lesbians without realizing that lesbians exist. Ruth. Go check Ruth out.
Okay. Well, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I guess. Abortion in the Bible is never mentioned, but causing a miscarriage is a property crime against the father.
Ooh, to be fair, Paul wrote about lesbians.
Oh, did he?
It's the Old Testament people who didn't know about lesbians.
Okay, thank you. God murders and commands the murder of children throughout the Old Testament. So there's all sorts of evil stuff in the Bible, and Christians, I think, are embarrassed by saying, oh, well, I believe in the Bible, and the Bible says X, because the Bible is pretty awful, and they know it.
I will vehemently disagree with Don here, because I don't think most Christians know what the fuck the Bible says or that it's repugnant, because they always seem surprised when I bring it up, and they're like, where is that in the Bible? And then I tell them.
Stick that in your pipe and smoke it, right?
I'm sure that there are some that are embarrassed. I know some that are embarrassed by things. And like even when Ray Comfort called in and I talked about slavery, his response was, well, I never said I believe everything in the Bible. That was what he said on this show, which caught me completely off guard.
Yep.
And helped remind me that, of course, not all of them believe the same thing, because most of them don't know what the hell they believe or why.
Okay. Another reason these religious exclusions are evil is if a religious person wants to do something objectively good, it would be welcomed, and there would be no law or regulation against it. Christians could pray to end poverty, and it would be celebrated. That would be an awesome thing they could do. But they obviously need exclusions so that they can screw over somebody, because that's the only reason to have a special dispensation in the laws. And so they are sort of admitting their belief is evil, because if they were really doing good, they wouldn't have to hide it and wouldn't have to, you know, have these laws. Another theme seems to be evasion of responsibility. And these people don't want to have any sort of professional fallout and such. And, you know, when you hear about bakers who are baking cakes for various things, there was a case in not the famous one in Colorado, but there was another one in Florida, I think, where, you know, they basically said, hey, we're not going to make a cake for your same-sex wedding. And word got out that they were doing this, and they ended up going out of business. And the religious folks are all like, oh no, how terrible. You know, and you know, if you treat your customers like crap, you know, then maybe you deserve to go out of business. And I would be okay with a lot of businesses if they just had a big sign on their business that said exactly how they're going to discriminate against people, and they were upfront and honest about it, and everybody could know that, then patrons could make informed choices. The free market will decide that this business is crap, and they don't need to be patronized. And in the case of professionals, that should be part of their credentials, and there should be a mechanism by which potential victims can avoid those people and not have to be victims to their, you know, to their evil. But Christians don't want that level of responsibility. They don't want that at all. So they want to have full privileges while denying that to others, and they want to do it insidiously where they can do the most harm.
It's one of those things where Christianity and religion are Eric just said that they're winning by a lot. So
okay.
Evidently my appeal for donations has fallen on deaf ears, and Eric decided to rub it in. So we'll see how it goes before the end of the show. But back to things that matter for this show. Christianity, it can be many different things to many different people. And you actually referred to the Bible as the big book of multiple choice years ago.
Actually, that was a Jeff D.
Was it Jeff D thing?
My quote is, it's a Rorschach test for the morally challenged.
There you go. So, and I think both of them are applicable, because if you listen, like, in Matthew, I believe it is, where Jesus is asked what you do to be saved, and he starts with keep the commandments, and the guy's like, all my life I've done that, and then he says, then sell all your belongings and give the money to poor. And this, you know, along with blessed are the meek and all these other things, would make it appear that Christianity is very much pro-charity towards those people who are worse off. But as soon as you aren't in favor of that, as soon as you realize that, for example, Austin has a homeless problem, and the Atheists Helping the Homeless and Humanists at Work and other organizations are down there doing what they can to help out, and there are also theistic organizations that are down there doing what they can to help out, and yet there are other Christian organizations that want to quote Paul from 2 Thessalonians, where he says, if a man will not work, he shall not eat. And so you can pick whichever one of those verses seems best suited to what your personal view is, to say, you know, and I have family members, I don't have to do that anymore. My mom is one of those people who is, when she looks at the homeless, they're just lazy. That's their fault. They will not work. Therefore, they shall not eat, Thessalonians, and considers that to be a loving expression. And I think it's garbage.
But. Yeah. Yeah. And I do tend to lump Christians together. And in this case, you know, I'm judging Christians by their impact on the world.
Well, you're studying a portion of the doctrine. And if, by the way, if you're the type of Christian who does not believe the thing that Don's saying, then clearly he wasn't talking about you. But if you're running around calling yourself a Christian, if you stand that close to somebody when we're painting them, it's not our fault that you got paint on you.
One more point here. Christians seem to realize that government is the real power here, and they are trying to run the levers of government. And if prayer worked like Jesus said it does many, many times in the Bible, they would just pray for what they want. And here's an example, Matthew 18:19. Again, I say to you, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them and by my Father in heaven. Yep. For where there are two or three gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them.
Which means no two Christians have ever prayed for world peace or an end to poverty or hunger or a solution to the problem of immigrants or anything, because it would have already been fixed by God, according to that passage.
But everyone knows the world doesn't work this way, and the religious people especially know it doesn't work that way, so they want to get to the real power, which is government.
Yeah, instead of gathering two or three together in Jesus' name, they want to gather up an evangelical block and lobby to enforce legislation and then give credit to God.
Right. So, in conclusion, from these bills, we learn that Christianity is evil, and they seem to know it. Their God doesn't work as advertised, and they clearly know it. Christians really just want power to do more evil, and they don't want any responsibility for the harm they cause.
Ooh, and that actually yes, I agree. That actually reminded me, because we've joked before, but that also means that no two Christians have ever got together to like pray that the bat cruise doesn't happen, because we keep having awesome bat cruises in September. But it reminds me, sorry to keep coming back to this, the first birthday card that I got was problematic, where it said, "We are praying for God to stop you, whatever the cost." Well, there were definitely two Christians gathered together to pray that prayer, and it hasn't happened. As a matter of fact, the show's popularity has done nothing but climb over the years.
Yes, it's kind of taken off.
So, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you didn't word it right. Maybe you're not right with God.
All right. Let's take calls.
Welcome to a new saltier Matt. All right, we'll start here. Thomas in Georgia says, proof to Matt that God does exist. So how you doing?
Not to me.
Thomas?
Thomas?
Come on now. It's supposed to be proof of God, and you're not
alone.
Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Had you on mute.
Oh, yeah. Would this proof work for Don, too, or is this just for me?
Don? Oh, it was mostly for you, Matt.
Okay. I don't understand how proof of God could only apply to me, but I'm ready. Bring it on.
Oh, well, what I meant is I wanted to talk to you. Matt, I'm a little curious. I want to know the basis you use to determine if anything is likely true. Do you use reasoning and or evidence to determine you are like? Okay. So I was just saying that because once in a debate you said your senses have not failed you yet or else you would be dead. So you're not fully 100% sure that anything is,
okay,
but you are likely sure.
Sure. I don't have absolute certainty about anything, but I proportion my confidence level to the evidence that supports it. And when I say things like my senses haven't failed me yet, I'm talking about that in a specific context because my senses have in fact failed me, as has everybody else's. We've all had optical illusions and auditory illusions and things like that. And I won't remember exactly where that quote came from, but that was probably a discussion about whether or not the senses qualify as properly basic, as if we should just trust them on their own. And I reject that idea because I know the senses can be fooled, and it's through independent verification of what my senses tell me that I determine whether or not something is likely or reliable, not merely my own senses. So if I see an apparition appear here and Don doesn't see it and nobody else here sees it, it seems far more likely that there's something wrong with my senses than that I have clued into the one thing everybody else missed.
Okay, I wasn't depending so much on your senses as much as your deductive reasoning skills. So, Matt, I once heard you and a co-host come to the conclusion that non-existence cannot exist. Therefore, existence has always been. Would you agree?
No, I don't believe anybody has ever said that.
I think I know what you're talking about in the sense that Tracy has pointed out that there's no reason to think that nothing could exist, and it may have been phrased at some point as non-existence. But yes, non-existence is not existence definitionally. But if you're talking about if you're talking about in the broader sense of like a cosmic sense of something versus nothing, then we have no evidence of a nothing. Even saying a nothing turns it into something, and there's no reason to think that there ever was or could be nothing.
Okay, so something has always existed.
That is the inference from that that seems most reasonable until someone can demonstrate nothing existing.
Okay, so using that logic, we can assume that our reality or our universe is eternal.
No.
Even
no, because our universe is really what we would call the local presentation of the universe. And the current math traces that back essentially under the Big Bang cosmological model to a singularity, but we can't investigate beyond that. So we cannot say whether perhaps the singularity always existed in some form or another, or whether it is a product of a multiverse, whether or not there was cyclic creation and destruction of universes through some natural process or otherwise.
Right. And time may have been created at that time too. And so the notion of something before is really potentially nonsense.
Yeah, there's no such thing as what happened before time.
Okay, well, something, it doesn't have to be our universe, something other than our universe may have existed always.
I see no problem with the notion that something has always existed.
Okay, what I'm trying to get around to, if we can agree that something has always existed, I'm trying to get around to consciousness. Is it more likely that consciousness formed out of non-conscious matter?
Yes.
Or that consciousness is... So it's more likely that consciousness formed out of non-conscious matter.
Consciousness is a label that for a phenomenon that we observe and try to define and understand, but consciousness isn't fully explained. But for example, my personal consciousness at one point, I have no reason to think it existed prior to my brain developing and that it emerges from my brain, from the physical matter. That is what the evidence points to with regard to thought and consciousness.
And we have billions of examples of consciousness coming from non-consciousness, right?
We do?
Yeah.
Every living thing that
Every
is conscious was
conscious.
Once not.
Yeah, that's what I'm debating right now. If consciousness has always existed,
I don't think it has.
Do you have evidence for that?
I don't. Just because something's always existed doesn't mean consciousness has always existed. What evidence do you have that consciousness has always existed?
Well, first, let me explain what I think consciousness is. I think it is that which has knowledge of self as well as of other and other being other than self.
Okay, so you're looking at consciousness as any thinking agent that also contains a theory of mind, the ability to recognize other minds as well.
That's a fine definition. We can go with
that. I'm okay with that.
Okay, so do you think it is possible for non-thinking matter, matter as far as we know, is unconscious, it is insentient and lacks any kind of awareness whatsoever?
So you're already using the wrong terms because a rock is matter and my brain is matter. And one of the two of them is demonstrably conscious and the other one isn't. So you can't just talk about whether or not matter can produce consciousness. It's a specific type and configuration of matter that produces consciousness.
Okay, this is what I'm trying to get at. If before you existed, was there a time where consciousness did not exist, therefore consciousness had to arise from rocks or dust or gas?
Consciousness doesn't arise from rocks or dust.
Okay, well, that's all we had to work with in the beginning.
No. Well, that's what I'm saying is I don't have any reason to think that anything – well, I'm not – in the beginning, we'll go with Big Bang. I don't think there was anything that was conscious there, and there's no evidence of anything that was conscious there. The first evidence we have of something that's conscious is in thinking agents on our planet that we have discovered throughout recorded history. But the consciousness didn't arise from rocks or dust. It arose from living brain matter, the neurons firing in a particular organization and construct.
Okay, Okay, but these neurons and brain matter did not always exist.
Correct. And when they didn't, there's no reason to think there was consciousness.
Okay, so let me tell you a bit about my belief. My belief is that God is a conscious being that has always existed. It is my belief that this God is all-knowing. One rule that humans already have determined as likely true is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. We have determined that rule of this universe to be likely true. There is an afterglow of radiation in our universe that scientists think is likely the result of a Big Bang.
Yeah.
It is my belief that this Big Bang was the most recent intervention from God in our universe.
So do you have any actual evidence for this belief, or is this just what you're convinced of?
Let me tell you a little bit more so we can.
I don't think we need to go there because it's a fairly simple question. You're convinced that what we would look at and say is the cosmic microwave background radiation, which seems to confirm the current Big Bang model, is in fact a remnant of the latest conscious creation thing from God. And all I wanted to know is, do you have evidence for this, or are you just telling me that's what you're convinced of?
Well, we can take God out of that situation for now, and just looking at the facts as they are, you can still determine deductively that. Well, just let me finish one moment here. All I'm saying is that as for the law that states that for every action there is a reaction, I can determine it is most likely.
That's a law of physics.
Okay. And using that law of physics, that's most likely correct. We can determine that the composition of our universe today is a result of the Big Bang. In other words, me and you and the Earth and how our day will go tomorrow was all determined billions of years ago when particles first got set into motion.
No. So you're conflating two things. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying, no, you're conflating two things. And one is, if we recognize that there was an instantiation of our local universe, okay, that in no way confirms the second half of what you're saying, that everything was determined. The universe may in fact be deterministic, and within determinism, there's the notion of hard determinism, which would fit into your thing, which is at the instant that the universe started to expand, everything that would ever happen was predetermined. And then there's a soft deterministic view, which is that it's largely deterministic and runs in an orderly fashion, but there may be quantum indeterminacy that affects this. But the fact that you've observed, for example, cosmic microwave background radiation tells you nothing about whether or not the universe is hard deterministic, soft deterministic, or apparently deterministic yet not. So I'm just saying you can't get from your A point to your B point.
Okay, well, would you agree that we are made up of the same elements and particles that were present at the Big Bang?
No.
No, because matter and energy are fungible. They can change into each other, and
they can change.
The Big Bang was mostly
created
hydrogen.
Yeah, and so it's not like uranium was present in the Big Bang.
Okay, but over time, different particles interacted with each other and made that element.
Right. Yes, but that's not.
Yeah, so how does this get us to God?
Particles.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, what I'm getting at is
you seem to be making a big argument for ignorance that, gee whiz, look at this mysterious thing, therefore God.
I don't think it's mysterious. I think that for every action, there is a reaction. And using that logic, it is logical to deduce that what is going on right now is an ongoing reaction. Of the action of the Big Bang.
Well, so even to the extent that if we were to apply action reaction to this, you'd have a better time arguing that there was an inverse universe created at the same time that our universe was created and that it's running in a different fashion. You shouldn't look at a causal chain, and just because we can talk about action and reaction, that's not the case for each individual step in there. It's when you're talking about causality, this caused this, caused this, caused this, et cetera, down this chain. that's not the same as for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. But what Don's asking is, okay, he and I will probably agree that the cosmic microwave background radiation, which seems to affirm the Big Bang model, at least for now, irrespective of whether or not you think it's a god, does not necessarily mean that the universe is entirely deterministic. But even if we looked at it as largely deterministic and there was a causal chain through all these things, how the hell does that get you to God?
Well, the first step that would be putting us on is that everything has already been determined.
Well, I already rejected that. It is simply you have not demonstrated that everything is determined. But even if I were to agree with you that everything is predetermined, if we went the hard determinism route and said that if we rewound time and let time play forward again, everything would have happened exactly the same way that it did. Even if I agreed with that, that does not get you to God.
Okay, the second step of that would be consciousness. You would either say that it's just by chance that everything was determined how it was, or that consciousness, if it always existed, the conscious mind.
You keep adding it. So first of all, I don't agree with that the universe is necessarily deterministic in that sense. But for the sake of argument, I said if I did, that doesn't get you to God. Then you come back with, well, if consciousness has always existed, which I've already rejected, I do not believe and see no evidence or reason to think that consciousness has already existed. So now you're adding in a second thing that you can't demonstrate and trying to build a case off those. You have to build a case off things if you're going to convince people that you can either demonstrate to be the case or get them to assent that it is the case. And you haven't done that for any of it.
Okay, so for the first part, you do not agree that the Big Bang is an action that spawned reactions that put us where we are today.
Not in the action-reaction sense. Is it a foundational causal component for the universe that we inhabit today? Yes.
Okay, so what does that mean? Do you partially believe that it is the cause?
You know, determinism is not a thing. You know, it's at the smallest levels, the universe is a quantum thing, and it's inherently statistical. It's not like bowling balls rolling around hitting pins. It is fields and probability calculations and these sorts of things. And, you know, we cannot predict, and it is impossible to predict when an atom is going to decay, for example. Statistically, you can measure the rate of decay of a bunch of atoms, but you can't know about a particular one. It is a purely spontaneous, uncaused thing.
Okay, I understand what you mean. Well, that is all the point.
And all this is going on in our brains too, and in how nature behaves all over the place. And so this idea that it's clockwork universe is just false.
Okay, well, I guess I'll have to concede on that point.
Okay, can I ask you this, Thomas?
Yes.
For the sake of argument, sure. Because I'm happy for you to go back and reconsider, reformat, come up with a different thing, but if I were to say, yes, the universe is purely deterministic, and from the instant the universe began, everything that would ever happen was set in motion then, and if you were to rewind and replay it, it would play out exactly the same, which is what you're arguing for, this hard deterministic thing. Even if I were to concede that, it doesn't get you to a God. It doesn't get you to consciousness always existing. And even if I were I can't concede that consciousness always existed, but I don't know how you can possibly get to therefore God, even if I were to concede most of that.
Well, if you were to concede all of it, that consciousness has always existed.
Yeah, that would be really. Yeah, if I conceded consciousness always existed, then there would then the response is, well, there has to be some consciousness prior to all the consciousness that we're aware of. But there's no point in conceding that because there's not evidence for it. But what you were starting to say was that if the universe is deterministic and consciousness has always existed, and then you were going to follow up with something outside of that, apart from just saying, I mean, you don't need any of the rest of that. If consciousness always existed, then okay, you have an argument for some sort of conscious agent prior to the
beginning. God is that consciousness.
Yeah, and then you get to call that God. It doesn't tell me what you know about God or if God's still here or any of those things. So the path that you're going down, I don't see how it can possibly get you where you want it to go. And so a better question to ask is, why do you believe and what do you think should convince somebody else? And you don't have to answer that now. I was just, you know, helping you direct things for next time because I think we're going to move on to other callers.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely going to go brainstorm and reformat. Cool. Thank you for your time. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day. All right. We've got Tori in Maryland. Thanks for waiting. You're on with Matt and Don.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Great. Glad you're here.
What you got?
Okay. So I was actually, I wanted to start off by saying I am, I suppose I would classify myself as an a-religious theist. I don't believe God particularly has any use for religion. I believe that he will use religion for the, you know, because he loves everybody, he's going to use what's at his disposal to reach people.
Why would you believe God loves everybody?
Well, I was indoctrinated with that, quite honestly.
Okay.
And I will, and I've confirmed that through my life experience. So I believe God loves everybody, and there are also forces.
Do you also believe God created malaria and Ebola and hurricanes and
no, I don't believe
cancer
that.
In children? Things
well,
like that?
Okay, put it this way. The Bible is very clear that God created both light and darkness. He created both good and evil. He created the potential for all of that. So, I mean, we might as well be honest. If he is worth his salt, then he created it. So the idea is, oh, go ahead.
Well, so first of all, I wasn't even sure that you were originally talking about a biblical God. But if you're going to use the Bible as the foundation for it, I would say that the claim that God loves everybody is antithetical to what we see in the Bible. But you said that you believe this because you were indoctrinated and because your life experience bears it out. So what life experience have you had with God?
Well, I have, through my meditation, through my prayer life, I have inquired of a lot of questions, had questions in my prayer life for him, questions about things that have happened to me, things that have happened to my family.
Me too.
You know, things that have happened. And I have felt a sensation of peace, a sensation of assurance through that time.
How do you know that's God?
And I have, go ahead.
How do you know that's God?
What was that? Well, I know that's God because through all of that, I have seen in visions and in dreams how he has manifested himself and given me messages.
Dreams aren't a manifestation. Oh. Dreams aren't a manifestation.
Well,
I have dreams all the time. They're not manifestation. We're talking about what has God done in reality. And if you talk about...
Well, you can take that... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
If your position is, you know, I ask what life experience you had with God, and you're like, well, I had questions for God, and I felt a sense of peace. And so my question was, how do you know that's God? And your answer was dreams.
And you were saying, well, dreams, if dreams are not a manifestation, I heard a little bit from what you were talking about earlier, where the guy who was on.
Yeah.
Somehow you guys were talking. Talking about consciousness.
Yeah.
So my position is the same brain that has a dream also is active when you're not dreaming.
I understand that. I had a dream one time that I had magical powers and summoned money to come flying into the house. And this is legit. It's a dream that I had. Is it tied to reality in any sense? Is there any way for me to demonstrate that there was anything true or real within that dream? Aren't dreams just about the worst possible semi-conscious experience that one could use to point to about something in reality? I mean, if you have two dreams and you think one of them's from God and one of them's not, what was the criteria that you used to determine that a dream was from God versus a dream that wasn't? Oh, something happened. Tori, I'm sorry. Something went wrong with the phones, and I thought you were just thinking about the question in silent. Did you hear the question? Because you're back on the air now. I don't know what took you off the air.
Please start again from the answer you were about to give.
Basically, you have two dreams, and you're convinced that one of them is from God and one of them is not. What's the criteria you used to determine which dream was from God?
Well, you basically compare it against the Judeo-Christian tenets that you find in the Bible.
Okay, but that's a circular argument because that's the thing you're trying to prove. If you're trying to demonstrate that the Judeo-Christian God is real, you don't get to go to the dream and say, "Oh, this is consistent with what I would find in the Bible." That's
no, you misunderstand.
Okay,
you misunderstand. It was never a test of me trying to demonstrate that he's real.
But that's the thing I'm asking.
I have accepted that he's real.
Yeah, but we don't.
Okay. And that still makes the argument circular and a case of self-deception. If you begin by believing that the Judeo-Christian God is the real one true God, and then you have a dream that's consistent with that, when you point back to the Bible to say, well, it was consistent with the Bible, then my answer is, so what? That doesn't prove anything other than you're now crediting God with a dream because you already believed God.
It's like a house of mirrors.
Okay. I totally get your point. I suppose I would respond by saying you can use that argument with a lot of things. I mean, especially you guys were talking about consciousness. You can literally say that if I were to ask you if you're conscious and you say, sure you are, I would say prove it. Well, only conscious people can answer the question. So there's a circular reasoning problem right there.
No. That is an
argument all over the place.
If you ask me if my pen works and I pick it up and write on the paper, that's not a circular argument. That's a demonstration.
Okay, but I didn't
and
say pen.
I know. And if consciousness is defined as an agent that can speak and engage in self-reflection, and you're able to demonstrate that, it's not a circular argument. It's a demonstration of that.
No,
but hang on.
I didn't ask.
Hang on.
Go ahead. I said go ahead.
Thank you. Consciousness is not a well-understood thing, and it may be difficult to demonstrate that anybody else is consciousness, is actually conscious, and it may be an illusion of an emergent property of our brains. None of us are claiming that we have absolutely solved the issue of consciousness, just that Don and I appear to be conscious. This is why you have in philosophy the problem of hard solipsism. I can't prove to you that I'm not the only mind. I can just demonstrate that I am to myself. So pointing out a problem with consciousness is not in any way – what you've just done there is something that's called the Tu-Quoque fallacy, because I point out that your argument's circular, and then you say, well, so is this other argument. And you can make a case that an argument for consciousness may be circular because it is incomplete. There's no way for me to demonstrate Don is conscious or that he even exists. This could all be I could be a brain in a vat being fed all this stuff. That is a real problem. But within the context of us living and experiencing, if we begin with the assumption, and it has to be an assumption, that you and I are sharing a reality so that we can communicate, then the conscious demonstration becomes that. It is a demonstration just as it would be with a pen. To say that I had a dream that is consistent with the biblical God that I already believe without good reason does not confirm that the dream does not add evidence to it. The only reason it is considered of that God is because you began with that, and that's why it's circular.
Okay, well, here's a question for you then. Since we are pretty much, I get the point. We can't falsify that, that God exists. You can't falsify it. And so since we're bound by that,
We have always said that we're open to evidence. There could be a God hiding under a rock on the other side of the universe, and we wouldn't know.
Yeah, all we're doing is asking, what is it that you found convincing, and do you think it should be convincing to anybody else? And
the only thing, honestly, the only thing that I found convincing is unfalsifiable, but I don't see that's any different than
well, it's a problem.
Community. Well, okay, tell me how evolution is falsifiable.
Finding rabbits in the Precambrian would falsify the current evolutionary model.
So basically you're telling me the only way to falsify evolution is by giving a non sequitur. I mean, I can dig for gold.
This is a well-known quote.
Find any.
I just
not a non sequitur.
I believe I just quoted Stephen Jay Gould, but the notion of falsifiable.
Okay, good for him.
The notion
it's good
of
for Stephen Jay Gould, but I mean,
cool.
If it's a
cool, you know why it's good for him? Because he's somebody who actually understands science and falsifiability. And you presented an attack on evolution as if it wasn't falsifiable, which makes me question if you even understand what falsifiability is.
Okay, tell me what unfalsifiability is.
Falsifiability is the way if something is falsifiable, it means there is some hypothetical real potential to demonstrate that it's not true. For example, if I say I've got $500 in my wallet, that's a falsifiable claim because we can open my wallet, and if there's not $500 in there, we've shown that my claim is false. If the model of evolution is such that it shows common ancestry, and yes, science is all inferences, it's, you know, that we're not going down that route of nobody's claiming absolute certainty, but if it's about common ancestry and everything else, and we have a geological time frame that actually demonstrates and continually supports the pathway of evolution, and you find something factual that contradicts that, that would show that your model is now false. And that's why Stephen Jay Gould, I believe it was, talked about finding fossilized rabbits in the Precambrian, because we know that rabbits evolved much later than that.
And evolution is not just about rabbits. It's about the whole chain.
Yeah, it's not like there's one
chain
thing.
Of life. And so you could – that's a whole class of examples that you could – do to falsify evolution?
Well, the only example that you gave was something that's clearly doesn't quite fit the, by exclusion to any other reason, that's the only reason it could possibly be that evolution is falsified.
No, that sentence barely made any sense, first of all.
No, I'm putting it together. Basically, what I'm saying is there quite possibly could be other reasons that the rabbit wasn't found in that layer.
I agree. Stop for a second.
Ahead.
You asked how evolution could be falsified. I gave a single example. I never said it was the only example or even implied that it was the only example. There are countless ways that you could falsify evolution. I just gave one. Now, if we found a fossilized rabbit in the Precambrian, we would then have to investigate it to see if there's some other explanation for why this thing appears out of place. And if it is in place, then we know our model is flawed somewhere. But if there's another explanation, just like when creationists try to talk about trees that cross rock strata as if that falsifies the genetic column. The problem is that we know how trees grow, and we also know how disasters occur, where a bit of rock can shift up and basically implant a tree along a striation of multiple layers, and then those layers can reform around it, in a crevice and thing. We know that there are things that might appear to be falsifying evolution, and then we investigate further to find out whether they are or not, because science doesn't begin with this is true and then try to debunk everything that comes up against it. Science follows the evidence where it leads. And so if you were able to come up with something, anybody, not just you, come up with something that falsified evolution, then not only would you get, you know, a Nobel Prize and turn all of science on its head, but it would be accepted. It's not like they have an agenda to keep evolution as the model. The problem here is that if an idea isn't falsifiable, it certainly doesn't get to count as science. There probably isn't sufficient evidentiary warrant to accept the model. And the right answer then is we don't know enough to say what is likely to be true.
All right. So would you classify evolution as a fact or theory?
Evolution is an observed fact. The theory of evolution by means of natural selection is the theory that explains the observations.
There's tons of evidence.
An observed fact.
Yes. We've observed evolution is the change in allele frequencies over time, which has been observed. Evolution is species evolving, changing in such ways that they are different from their ancestors over lengths of time. This is how we can do medicine, because bacteria evolves. It's just an observed thing. This happens. Things change. And then there is a model, a theory, that that attempts to describe the mechanism by which those things change. And it is natural selection acts on things and determines if they are capable of surviving or not. And those things that do get to pass on their genetic code to their offspring. And genetic code is transmitted with errors. And that plus time equals change.
And if evolution were found false today, it wouldn't have any impact on whether there's a God, whether a God exists.
True.
Tell me how.
How? Okay. Yes, let's say right now you've convinced me that things did not evolve by means of natural selection. How does that in any way prove that a God did it?
There has to be another explanation.
There has to be some other explanation, but that doesn't mean the explanation is God. You have to demonstrate that God is, in fact, the most likely explanation. It doesn't just win because the current model got debunked. That's like saying somebody's dead, and we think the butler did it, and we start building a case against the butler, and we find all this evidence, and then somebody finds out that the butler was in another town at the time it was that the murder occurred. So now I know it wasn't the butler. And now you're saying, well, if it's not the butler, it had to be the maid. That's not the way reason works. It's not the way evidence
works. The time to believe something is when there's sufficient evidence for it. And we're beg every single time on this show, give us some evidence for God.
And what you came up with, and I'm not dissing you at all over this. I'm talking about how this is a real problem, is you became convinced that the God of the Bible was real. And then when asked about your interactions with God that affirmed this, according to you, you came up with dreams. And all I wanted to know is, how do you tell the difference between a dream that's from God and a dream that's not? And your answer was, well, it's consistent with the Bible. And that's what makes this circular. The two things are pointing to each other with no substantive evidence in between. It would be just as – like a Hindu could have dreams about Ganesh. Does that mean that Ganesh is real?
I believe that his experience was real.
I have no problem with the fact that you had a dream. I'm asking, how do you tie that dream to God? Just like if a Hindu said, if a Hindu said that he had a dream about Ganesh, I would ask him, okay, how does that in any way demonstrate that Ganesh is real just because you dreamed about it? And that's why I was saying that dreams are probably the worst thing you could point to.
Okay, but that's the whole point of what I was saying about consciousness. The same brain is going to project those images, whether you're dreaming or whether you're awake. So we're all going to be subject to that circular reasoning fallacy anyway.
No, we're fucking not. We may have limitations about recognizing and understanding consciousness, but the fact that there's a problem there doesn't mean that you get to smuggle that problem into your argument for God and claim victory. The fact that one thing, is fallacious.
Go ahead.
The fact that one thing may be fallacious or broken tells you nothing about the other.
I'm merely pointing out that both things are fallacious.
Okay, then I don't believe in consciousness. Okay,
we're still looking for evidence for God.
Are you happy now? I'm willing to concede that we can't prove consciousness and you can't prove God. Are we done?
No, I'm basically saying that the premise of this dismissing God based on lack of evidence and unfalsifiability is not a sufficient reason because everything...
Not a sufficient reason for what? For
dismissing the idea that God exists.
It absolutely is. It absolutely, undeniably, unequivocally is sufficient to dismiss the claim. It is not sufficient to conclude that the claim is false. It is perfectly sufficient to conclude that I do not have good reason to believe this. You, on the other hand, are looking at this and saying, you can't prove it's wrong, and I believe it, therefore I'm going to keep believing it. And that is a fallacy.
Okay, but I'm saying that we can do the same thing for evolution.
No, you can't.
No,
you can't.
Falsify evolution.
No, you seem to want us to lower our standards here. And you know, I'm sorry that we're not willing to do that.
Evolution begins with an observation of facts in reality, and then the model does its best to explain those facts. And the nice thing about evolution is that it explains them incredibly well and even makes predictions such that we can confirm that it is a good scientific model. Nobody's advocating that it's absolutely true. To say that, and to say that because evolution hasn't been falsified, which seems to be what you're saying, that all of a sudden you can believe in a God without warrant, I'm sorry, but it doesn't make it reasonable. If something is either demonstrably reasonable, like accepting a model of science that is supported by evidence to explain as best we can an observation, that is reasonable. Saying, I became convinced of a God and then I had dreams that were consistent with the God that I believed in, therefore, that's a good reason to believe in God, that is in fact unreasonable.
Okay. Quick question for you then.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I said okay.
Quick question. Okay. Is evolution
relevant to this conversation? No.
What was that?
I finished your question. Is evolution relevant to this conversation? And my answer is no, because even if you could poke...
That's the way the conversation happened to go to. The conversation evolved this way.
Oh, the irony.
Nice. For that, Tori, I will say that there is a type of evolution that does apply to this conversation.
Right, there you go.
Yeah. What's the question?
Adaptation make evolution falsifiable, but not falsifiable. I'm sorry.
I don't understand.
Adaptation.
I don't understand why we're having any conversation about this at all. This is not the evolution experience. You're not talking to scientists. We are not here defending evolution. And we both acknowledge that even if you proved evolution wrong right now, that would in no way prove that there's a God. So you called in because you believe in a God. And actually, what it says you called in for was to find out why we're atheists, which we haven't touched on at all.
Yeah, I hadn't gotten.
Well, it's too late for that shit now.
All right. Well,
but you could sit here like every other creationist and try to poke holes in evolution all day long on a call-in show that isn't about science. This isn't the way science is done. And even if you succeeded, you wouldn't be a half of a step closer to demonstrating the truth of your God proposition. Evolution is irrelevant. The flaws in some other model are irrelevant. You might as well have called in to say, well, if the germ theory of disease, well, that's not relevant either. Although the Bible gets it wrong on the germ theory of disease. So I bet you go to a doctor. Or do you just pray to get healed?
No, I will go to a doctor, sure.
Sure. Do you get vaccinated? Yeah. Do you get vaccinated?
No, I don't get vaccinated.
Well, you should, Ben, and everybody should who can. Unless there's some medical reason why you can't, you are now contributing to actual harm by not getting vaccinated because a lot of people depend on herd immunity from others to make sure they don't get sick. Why don't you get vaccinated?
Well, I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist, I would say. There are things that I picked up where there is some illegitimacy in the vaccines that are provided today, and I have a question mark over my head as to whether or not I should allow myself and my family to get vaccinated.
Cool. Then we should stop talking about a God because you're never going to get there from there. We should definitely start talking about why you don't accept evolution. And you should actually go research the good science on vaccines and human illnesses and the things that would actually get you the information rather than being a conspiracy theorist and just that's not skepticism. Skepticism is about doubt. It's not about cynicism. And so if there are facts that the world does not know, then I perfectly understand somebody going, wow, I'm not too sure about that. Like, I'm not too sure about consciousness and I'm not too sure about this other thing. But you live in a world in the best of all possible times, both with regard to health information and access to information in general. You live in a time where it is easier than ever in our history to get good information. Now, yes, there's a bunch of bad information out there too. But I care more today about whether or not you're going to remain a conspiracy theorist and potentially be a health risk to the community than I do about whether or not you're loosely convinced of a God because of a dream. I don't want to turn this into the vaccination experience, but we're not going to spend any more time talking about this today. And I would encourage you to go hit skeptical sites, go hit science sites and learn more about vaccination and those information.
All right. Well, I'm sorry that the conversation went this way. I had some other questions, but thank you for your time.
Sure. You're welcome to call back another day.
After you're vaccinated. unless your doctor gives you an exemption, you know, like, oh, Tori can't be vaccinated for these.
You have to be vaccinated to call in.
Yeah, I want that certificate. Because vaccines don't cause autism. Vaccines have... It's baffling.
Save countless lives, yes.
I talk about this is the best of all times. Yes, I'm a fan of a lot of the work that Steven Pinker does, even though we didn't get to talk about it because there may be some disagreements. We're in 2019. And there are more people who believe the earth is flat than ever before, that as far as I can tell. There is more pushback to good, reliable science. And it is the conspiracy theorist mindset that is propagating all of this. It's because there's a general sense of distrust. And here, if you get nothing else, the fact that you have been lied to doesn't mean you are being lied to. The fact that there have been conspiracies doesn't mean there is a conspiracy just because you think there might be. The fact that some people, including governments and scientists and everybody else, are untrustworthy doesn't mean that this particular piece of information is something that is untrustworthy. You have to do your due diligence. You have to find out. And if you're just like, well, I'm not sure, so I'm going to do it. Well, you have that. That is your prerogative. But I'm telling you, you are fucking up. And you are making a mistake when it's really easy to go out and research this stuff. And if you're still not convinced, then you should keep investigating. Just like I've spent the last 14 plus years having people call in to try to explain to me why they're convinced a God exists. Now, have we gotten anything new? No. Have we gotten any hard evidence? No. Have we gotten a parade of fallacies that we've exposed? Yes. If I were like the people who were conspiracy minded, I would be sitting here saying, I've spent more than enough time looking into this shit. Clearly, every single God ever proposed is just a hoax, a fiction that was generated by somebody else. That's my conclusion. I've done my due diligence and looked into it. The problem is I'm actually a skeptic and I actually care about good standards of evidence. So instead of saying that, I say the God claim hasn't met its burden of proof yet. I'm unconvinced that it exists. And for some gods where it conflicts with actual observed facts of reality, I am convinced those gods don't exist. But I am always open to having new evidence and new information change my mind, because to shut that down is the antithesis of skepticism. And that's what conspiracy theory thinking does. And if you watch on Netflix the latest flat earth movie that's up there. Anybody, what's the name? Somebody's got the name. It's funny. The flat earthers behind the curve. The flat earthers, thank you, Mark. The flat earthers go out to actually test their flat earth theory scientifically. And when they get results that confirm that the earth is round or fail to confirm that the earth is flat, they either tried to hide that, although it was caught on tape, or they just flat out deny it, or they scratch their head and go, we've got to come up with another experiment. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. And when that experiment also shows that the Earth is an oblate spheroid and it's not a flat thing, yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
And let me add one thing. The vaccination thing matters. You know, if you are delaying making this decision or you're making bad decisions, you know, those things have ripple effects throughout society. And so you can affect other people. You can affect children and,
right,
and others that are vulnerable. And so, you know, there are some questions that matter a lot. You know, the God question matters. You know, if the yep. universe has a God, it's a very different thing than if a universe that doesn't have a God, right? And so, it's the question's important, I think. And all of the things that follow from that. And so they're important questions, and it's worth spending the time to try to understand these important questions and form an opinion and try to come up with a reasonable solution to them.
And once you have an opinion, try to show that it's not correct. Take the opposite side. Dig in. Do what you're – so
– that's the hardest thing to learn to do.
It is. To not become so attached to an opinion because it's yours. Yeah,
I have an article in the newsletter about that very thing, confirmation bias if you want to look at the newsletter.
Last month, on my Atheist Debates Patreon project, I posted a video called Am I Too Skeptical? Because I did a debate on the resurrection, and basically the constant attack I get, and this happens mostly in resurrection debates, is that my standards of evidence are just too high. And I
you need to have a softer brain.
I had another resurrection debate on Thursday evening, and this accusation came up again. Fortunately for me, during this debate, there was a moment where I demonstrated, thanks to the help of the person I was debating, conclusively that the standards of evidence that I was advocating were vastly superior to the standards of evidence that he was advocating, because he would have been conned. And so tomorrow I'm going to record that as a separate example there to talk about this notion of good standards of evidence. But we're not going to go through that here. We got more callers.
Oh, before we do that.
Absolutely.
It looks like we're behind on the money.
We are. So Talk Heathen raised $2,005. I think maybe that $5 came from me. So if we don't get over that, that's going to be a problem. We are behind by $1,132.
Oh, my goodness.
So we've raised $872.66. And while I like the 66 cents part,
somebody probably donated
$6.66. Otherwise, Jamie and Eric are just going to be fucking unbearable for the next couple of weeks. I mean.
Okay, we got some more money in
right,
the audience.
There's,
praise the Lord.
Yes. Pass the biscuits. All right. Are we ready? We've got Saad in Pakistan. Welcome back.
Hey, Matt, how are you doing? Good to meet you guys. Meet to talk to you again.
Are you going to donate $1,100 right now?
Right now,
they're standing in front of me, just like brushing off their shoulders, and I'm being trash talked here. All right. Anyway, we'll get to the call because that's more important. Thanks for waiting.
Sorry for your
No, no problem. Well, I wanted you first in the audience and all of you guys, Assalamu alaikum, may peace be on you before we start. So, and also wanted to personally apologize to you, Matt, for how things ended last time. So I hope you're cool.
You don't owe me an apology at all. I mean, I appreciate the fact that you're apologizing, but you don't. You're talking about what you're convinced of and what you're not. And I pointed out where something that you're, you know, we're kind of trying to apologize for was actually repugnant. Unless you've changed your mind and are now convinced that there is actually a problem with having a 9-year-old become betrothed to a grown adult, unless you've changed your mind on that, I don't even understand what good an apology would do. If I've convinced you that that's a bad idea, well, then I would understand an apology.
Well, honestly, it's become a very controversial subject, so I'm not really an expert on that, and I'd rather not go there.
You don't need to be in. No, no, no.
That's fine. We don't need to make it about that.
I'm not going to try and make this whole call about that again, but that's a cop-out. You don't need to be an expert to come to the realization that it is morally repugnant to betroth a 9-year-old girl to an adult. If you're not expert enough in morality to recognize that that's a problem, then your lack of expertise on morality is the only thing that should be discussed. But I'll set that aside because you want to talk about something else.
Yeah. I mean, we could always touch on that later because there's so much, especially with the, when it concerns hadith, there's a lot of discrepancies in what's known as the...
No. It's really simple. Is it morally permissible to betroth a 9-year-old to a grown man?
I guess in today's day and age, it's not. I agree with you there.
And what day and age was it and why?
I really don't know. Maybe the customs of that time were different, and maybe I'm not even sure. That's something that I'd rather not talk about.
I know you'd rather not talk about it because you don't have an explanation, and it preys upon your mind that you could in fact be wrong about this, and that is a problem for Islam. That is why. This to me, if I found out that the God I worshipped was okay with betrothing kids to adults, I would be spending my time on nothing else until I came up with an explanation for that.
Yeah, that's a good answer to that.
So what did you spend your time on? Let's continue.
Well, I just felt
like, you know, the past few weeks since, you know, we've been, since the show, since my last show, conversation with you, I've spoken to a few friends and I've kind of went on a journey of my, you know, kind of rediscovering myself in that time and age. And I kind of felt like, you know, it's throughout my life, even though I've been raised Muslim in Pakistan and I've traveled over the world, I've seen and experienced many different people and many different cultures. There's a lot of things growing up in Islam that I appreciated about it. There's a lot of things that I felt like phony scholars and phony teachers would tell me and I would disagree with them. So I was always questioning a lot of things that were supposedly part of my faith, but they later on realized they weren't. And I can tell you this much, for me, the reason why I'm calling, you know, why I feel like it's good to have a belief system in organized religion, and why, because, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of gives you a code of life.
We went through this last time you called, where your basic argument was praying five times a day and having the structure of a religion provided people with a structured life that was beneficial to them. Did I in any way suggest that that wasn't the case?
But
my only concern is whether or not the religious claims are true, not whether or not they provide a benefit. I'm perfectly willing to accept that a religiously structured life, an externally structured life, certainly benefits some people. There are people who are incapable of structuring their life without help from somebody else. And so they'll rely on a religious structure. They even rely on secular humanist manifesto to help structure. They rely on their work to be the foundation that structures and guides their life. They may depend on a partner to provide that sort of, none of that is relevant at all to whether or not Islam is true, because that structure exists within Christendom, within Hinduism, within self-help gurus that, you know, make millions of dollars standing up telling,
prisons.
Some people are going to do better in prison than they are out. That is all completely irrelevant to whether or not the underlying claims of the religion are true, right?
That's true, but don't you see that throughout history that a lot of people, I mean, it's interesting comparative religious studies, mm-hmm. and I read books by Karen Armstrong called History of God. That's a really interesting book that you should read if you have the time. I realized how Islam has been the fastest growing religion in the world. It's surprisingly why a lot of people, I mean, look at Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, all of these guys. They were impressed by the faith for some reason.
I don't care.
They found some sort of.
I don't care. The truth of a religion is not impacted in any way by the number of people believe it, how quickly it spreads, how confident they are that it's true. None of those things are relevant. That's not impacted in any way by the structure that somebody gets out of it or the personal well-being and benefits that they feel they want to attribute to their religion. All of these things you're raising are completely irrelevant to whether or not the religion is true. Do you have anything that speaks to the truth of the religion?
Well, one thing me, both Matt, you and me and can agree on is that, you know, I've tried to find, you know, through my life and even recently to try to find some sort of scientific evidence that could, you know, at the end of the day, the foundation of all religions, whether it's Islam, Judaism, Christianity, any of the monotheistic faiths that are very popular, you know, is the foundation belief that there is a God, right? That there's a creator in the universe that, you know, is through, as that revealed, that sent revelations through prophets. And then these books came and, you know, certain people, part of the world believe a certain belief, certain sections believe another belief, and then constantly argue with each other, which is right. So the one thing that I have a hard time, just like you, is figuring out on a scientific or any sort of empirical way that God truly exists. Now, one of my friends did mention something called the Hobbes something principle. Now, I'm not really an expert in physics or quantum physics, so I really don't know how much of that stuff is true. But, you know, there are arguments that people will say all the time. And, you know, you've had different callers.
I want to make sure I'm understanding. Are you saying that you and I agree that there is not currently scientific evidence for God or evidence for God that should be compelling?
Unfortunately, I'd like to say there, I would love to believe that there is, but only reason why I believe that, that most people, all the world, including me, believe in God is because it's part of a belief and it's blind faith.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
So you're admitting that you believe something without good reason. Why are you bothering to talk to us? Because I'm only going to be convinced by good reasons.
Well, I want to ask you, how can you prove a supernatural being? The problem is, like,
I don't think you can. I'm on record repeatedly pointing out that I know of no way anyone could ever confirm supernatural action or causation in any way. But that's not a problem with my standards of evidence. That's a problem with supernatural claims. It just because you can claim something and somebody doesn't know how you could demonstrate it's true doesn't mean that the problem's on their end, because it may not be true.
And presumably you could pray to the God and find out how to do it.
How do I prove that there are Earth-like descendants of alligators on Alpha Centauri, or a planet orbiting Alpha Centauri? I can't prove that. That doesn't tell you whether or not it's believable.
Well, I feel like, you know, there's one way I feel like some people have kind of experienced what they would necessarily call God, and I feel like I've kind of experienced it that way.
Me too.
Me
too. And then I recognized that I had no justification for attributing my experience to a God. What justification do you have for attributing the experience that you credit God with actually being God? You've already acknowledged you don't have that information.
What information do you know about Sufism? Have you ever read anything by Rumi?
Jalaluddin
Rumi is a famous poet, philosopher.
No, I know very little about Sufism specifically. But I can tell you this, if Sufism had reliable evidence that would allow somebody to show the supernatural exists, we'd all fucking know. It'd be on the front page of every paper. It'd be the Templeton Foundation would stop investigating Christian prayer and they'd be going after Sufis. It would be Nobel Prize worthy. There's nothing that you can point to that some Muslim scholar wrote that is going to be able to confirm supernatural causation that the whole world would not already have known about. Or at a minimum, the scientific community.
Or it had to be a really good conspiracy that they hid that.
I mean, you can't have a good conspiracy if Saad knows it, because he's getting ready to tell us. So what is it that confirms the supernatural?
You know, honestly, that's good. In my opinion, I feel like, you know, you need, honestly speaking, you know, if we just look at the fact that philosophically, you know, I mean, I don't know. I've always felt like, You know, when you meditate, like the previous caller said, and when you meditate, and especially the Sufi way of doing it, I've been doing it recently, and, you know, feel like you suddenly elevate yourself to a very higher plane.
No.
You feel like you...
I don't even know what higher plane... I don't even know what higher plane means. That is language that people use to describe things that they can't really describe. Hey, you know how when you're having an orgasm after 12 hours of tantric sex, you know how that makes you feel like you're on another plane? I could say that. You know how when you drop acid and you sit around and you stare at cartoons on TV and then they appear to come to life and you get this euphoric kind of shocky feeling? I could say that too. But it doesn't mean I've reached a higher plane. It just means that I'm talking about something that is indescribable, and I'm using whatever glurgy language I have access to. But I don't know what higher plane means. And I don't know that anybody has actually ever reached it.
I guess it's some sort of spiritual high. I'll be honest with you. Now that I'm going to be sidetracking here for a bit. Hey. And I don't know if anyone here is a fan of this, and I think you mentioned it last time too on your show. The best high I feel these days is when I smoke hookah, the shisha, the water pipe.
Okay.
Amazing. You guys should try.
That's cool. I haven't had that high. If I were to have that high, would it teach me what higher plane and spirituality means, and would I come to an understanding of God? Or would I just look at it and say, I was fucking high?
The funny thing. You know, Matt, so the funny thing is, you know, I'm saying it half jokingly because it's possibly true that, you know, the hookah is so popular in the Middle East.
Yes.
It's very possible that Muslims invented it, and maybe they were getting a buzz out of it, and maybe they were experiencing God.
Yes, and it doesn't just apply. It doesn't just apply to your religion. If you look at Christianity, when you look at the Book of Revelation, John of Patmos, who was on an island supposedly full of mushrooms, is having these visions that make no sense. So much so that when they were putting the Bible together, Revelation almost didn't get included in the Bible because there were some Christians who felt that it read like nonsense. It's all this metaphor. I mean, it reads like an acid trip. It reads like a mushroom trip for a great portion of it. Now, does that mean that Christianity was founded on visions from drugs? Not necessarily. Certainly can't rule it out as a possibility. When you talk about, for example, Paul in Christianity talks about the people who saw Jesus after he was risen. This came up during the debate, and I'll talk more about it tomorrow. But it's like, you know, first he appeared to Mary Magdalene, then the 12, and then the 500, and lastly to James, and then to me. Well, that's Paul making a claim. I have not heard from the 12, Mary Magdalene, the 500, or James. And now I'm just taking Paul's word for it that all these people all saw Jesus. But Paul describes his experience of meeting the risen Jesus as he was blinded and heard a voice on a road where his companions didn't see anybody. Now, doesn't that sound a lot like, a schizotypical break from reality?
Epileptic seizure.
Aren't there countless medical conditions that might account for that? And if he's my primary source and he's the source that's telling me about these others, that's a problem. And similarly, I have no idea what Muhammad was smoking when he decided to transcribe the Quran. I don't know if he was smoking anything. I don't have any way to investigate this. I don't know if what he saw was real. All I can look at is judge what I'm told from history. And there's no single historical document that has ever or could ever confirm supernatural causation. That's just not the way demonstrations work. Because at that point, it's all a story that somebody's telling and a story you can't investigate.
We have ample stories of that sort of thing, and they're all fiction.
Now,
as far as
I'm not saying, Islam is garbage because it's all a drug-fueled hallucination. I'm not saying that. I'm just given all the possibilities, I don't know how anybody ruled that out. And even the failure to rule that out does not mean that Islam is true. You have to provide evidence for it. And that's why I was asking about evidence of the supernatural. And you want to go to historical documents from Sufism. Well, that's just somebody describing their meditation, right? And how they felt.
So yeah, what these guys do is they really go into a lot of deep thought. There's music involved in it. In fact, a lot of the music from Pakistan,
Pink Floyd.
If you look at a lot of pop, there's bands in Pakistan who were inspired by Pink Floyd.
Of course they were. There are bands everywhere who were inspired by Pink Floyd.
But this sort of description reminds me of our earlier caller that said, "Well, the dream confirms it, right?" And you know, altered states are not really evidence, right?
I've heard dreams that I've spoken to sheikhs, and the sheikhs have told me that they've seen Muhammad in their dreams. I've spoken to Christians, and they've said they've seen Jesus in their dreams. So the issue here is when you have a strong belief in something, you're going to be always thinking about it.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
and I would assume that you would agree that because we get these reports from different religions, and there's no way to distinguish which of them is actually correct. They cannot all be correct, but they could all be false. And so what's the reasonable position to come to when you hear multiple competing claims of revelation from different religions? Isn't it most reasonable to say, I do not have sufficient information to accept that any of them are correct, right?
Well, until there is sufficient reliable evidence, it's all blind faith. And you know, some people are comfortable with it, like I am.
Okay, why would you be comfortable with blind faith with, I know that you know that blind faith can lead you to things that aren't true. So it's blind faith is not a reliable path to truth. So don't you care whether or not your beliefs are true?
Well, I do, because at the end of the fundamental reasoning behind my faith is La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, that there is no God but God and Muhammad is a messenger. That's the creed, the Islamic creed. So if I believe in that, then everything else has to be true too, because this is what I believe in. And if
so, you believe Jesus was the Son of God?
No, I don't. No, Muslims do not believe Jesus is the Son of God.
I know Muslims don't, but you just said you had to believe everything, and that's the problem with faith, is that if you exercise faith in the Quran and the Hadith, then why can't you also exercise faith with regard to the Bible and just accept Jesus? Because aren't those on equivalent footing? You've just demonstrated and noted that you don't have the evidence that would show you which one is correct, and so you're just taking it on faith. Well, I can take either one of those on faith, right?
It's true. Okay, let's assume number one.
But just take hang on. Faith. Hang on. If I can take both of them on faith, both of them can't be true, right?
Well, you read the Quran, then you decide for yourself which one makes more sense to you.
No, that's not what I asked. Here's two religions. I could take either one of them on blind faith. They cannot both be true, correct?
Well, that's one way to look at it. But
no, that is the way to look at it. Come on now, let's be honest. Christianity and Islam cannot both be true, correct? Because one of them claims that Jesus was the Son of one. Both of them cannot be true, correct?
Agreed.
Okay.
Yes.
So we have two religions.
One of them has to be true.
One of them, at least one of them has to not be true. They could both not be true. But
exactly,
I could accept either of them on faith, right?
Yes, you can.
And that means that faith is not a reliable path to truth, so I would need something else. So what is the something else that would make Islam reasonable and Christianity unreasonable?
The funny thing is that's unresolved mysteries of the universe. I wish there was a way that you could... That,
me too.
You know, God would appear and show everyone.
But here's the problem.
We wouldn't be having this discussion, but maybe this is a good thing that we are. It leads to some really interesting phone calls.
Here's the real problem. You said you care whether or not your beliefs are true. And if you truly care whether or not your beliefs are true, then it's incumbent upon you to come up with a mechanism to distinguish between those two and all the others, but we're just starting with those two. And if you cannot come up with that mechanism, then the only rational position is I cannot accept either of them because I don't have sufficient reason to distinguish between them. And yet you simultaneously claim that you care about whether your beliefs are true, and yet you're just going to go ahead and accept Islam on blind faith. Do you see the contradiction there?
Well, not well. You know, that's a very good point you brought out. What I'm trying to say is that my reason for believing in Islam is just when I was in school, when I was trying to actually get my question answered from God, and I spoke to a teacher of Islamic studies. He told me that, you know, everything else in Islam is based on reasonable logic, according to his and my opinion. And, you know, but the only thing that there is tawhid is blind faith. Tawhid basically means belief in one God. That's the only thing, blind faith.
About faith, and that is, I consider it a good way to be wrong. And the reason is that of all the different claims you can make, most of them are going to be wrong. And so since faith can support anything at all, you're very likely going to be led to the wrong conclusion from faith. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
This is why when somebody tells me that they care if their beliefs are true, and then they turn around and say they're willing to accept something on blind faith, I know that they're not being honest with me or honest with themselves, because if you care about whether your beliefs are true, you cannot accept things on faith, because faith isn't a pathway to truth. Faith is a pathway to being wrong, as Don pointed out, more likely than it is to being right. Like, if I pull out a dollar bill out of my wallet and I look at the serial number, and you could take it on faith that the number's 867-5309, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're almost certainly going to be wrong.
It is.
It's Tommy Two Tone Jenny. Okay. Don't lose that number. But
I'm a big 80s fan. Just to let you know, I'm a huge Knight. I grew up in the 80s. I am a huge Knight Rider, Airwolf.
Okay.
But if I told you that I had a dollar bill that had 867-5309 as its serial number, do you know that I'm wrong?
You could be wrong.
But am I wrong?
And let's see.
But am
see,
I wrong?
See, Matt. Let me put it this way. I think the best way to answer your question is, for example, like you brought about your parents, and you talk about people who we necessarily call our loved ones, our family and friends. I'm friends. I have really good friends, and I have faith in my parents because of years of being of spending time with them and years of earning their trust and, yep. and earning. So all of those things leads me to believe that yes, they can't be wrong. Or they can't prove it because I have so much faith in them. I don't need to test my mother and my father's faith.
You should
trust in a scientific. I have my mother and my father. Thankfully, have been amazing. They've been there for me my entire life, and I honestly owe them a debt of gratitude.
So you have evidence for the character of your parents.
See, what you should be doing is proportioning your confidence to the evidence. So there are people that I've met in my life. A couple of people, I won't name them, who were both very good friends of mine, and I trusted both of them very much. And it turns out, both of them were megalomaniacal, narcissistic, sociopathic liars who were taking advantage of me, and I did not know that that was going on until I had sufficient evidence for it. So when I say that I love someone and trust someone, I'm also saying, to the extent that I understand them, I understand this to be the character they've represented to me. I have another friend who's never done anything wrong to me, and we have a mutual friend who keeps warning me, don't spend time with that guy because he's going to talk trash about you behind your back and he's going to be terrible. But I haven't seen evidence of that, and I have to understand that this is maybe a conflict between their interpersonal relationship. The fact that I'm reaching a conclusion based on the available evidence is not a problem because my conclusion is tentative, subject to revision, and I'm only as confident as the evidence for it. And so where I completely trusted one person, as soon as I started getting information, all of a sudden my trust in them declines. But what you're doing is saying, I'm just going to trust that this is the case. I can't demonstrate it. A bunch of people around me think the same thing, and I love them, and it seems to be helpful and useful to me, but I can't demonstrate it. But I'm going to live my life according to these edicts, even though I don't know that they're true. That is a problem for me. And I don't understand why it's not a problem for anybody who cares about truth.
You know, there's a song by Bon Jovi and by Poison, the 80s metal band. Then again, I'm a huge fan of that too. So there's a song by them. Both of them sound the same title, but different way of singing it. Something to Believe In.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is people everywhere all the world need something to believe in because somehow or the other, everyone is lost. Everybody needs to find some sort of thing to be confident about. So when you pray to somebody, it gives you some sort of confidence that there's someone out there listening to me. And yeah. Maybe it gives you,
now we're back to the thing that you mentioned in the last call and this call. I don't give a rat's ass if praying to a fictional God makes you feel better. I care about whether or not the God is fictional or not. I fully acknowledge that people can feel better after rubbing a lucky rabbit's foot, after putting on their lucky socks, after spinning in circles three times or knocking on wood. Those are things that are superstition. I care about whether or not they're true. People don't need something to believe in the context you're trying to claim that they do. I'm fine with a metaphorical notion that we all need something to believe in, but I don't need a God to believe in.
Well, Dan Dennett wrote a book on that very topic, and I can't remember the name of it. But he was talking about belief in belief.
Yeah, that's breaking the spell.
Breaking the spell. And so if you're willing to do reading, that might be a good book for you to read sometime.
Or you could go see Dumbo, because Dan references Dumbo as well, because Dumbo's magic feather, the feather doesn't actually give – oh, sorry, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen it.
This is a movie that's coming out.
And, yeah, there's a new Dumbo.
An old movie redone.
The feather doesn't actually give Dumbo magic powers, and that's the point of the story. And yet Dumbo believes that the feather does. I'm getting another update.
Uh-oh.
We are all, no, you're wrong. So those guys actually went out and got what looks like bottles of champagne, and Eric is now holding up something saying we're $50 right. away.
He's blown the money already.
But I just got a note from the back room.
That counts against yours.
I just got a note. I just got a note from the back room that we're $38 away and we have 5 minutes left in the show.
Hey.
So I will be donating $40 by.
Okay.
Sorry that we had to do that during your call, Sad.
It's okay, Matt.
Okay, we got some audience members doing it too.
You see, Matt, I guess what it all boils down to is, I don't know how much, I have a friend last week, I met him while I was smoking hookah, and he told me that, he heard my call with Tracy, and he said that, I know something that he truly believes the Higgs boson, whatever that is.
Higgs boson.
Is the Higgs boson.
Yeah.
Sorry, excuse me.
It was a theoretical physical concept, physics concept that was demonstrated to be consistent with observations at the Large Hadron Collider.
It's according to him, it says that it's demonstration that God exists.
Oh, bullshit. I mean, it's called the God particle, which was a terrible name that some science enthusiasts gave it. It's not a particle that in any way ties to God or proves God. What it is it's what gives matter mass. And I'll probably get an email saying I'm wrong about that. And that's fine because I'm not a physicist. But I pretty much tell you that I would bet that nobody who actually worked on the Higgs boson stuff actually thinks that it's proves God. And if they do, they're still wrong.
And if you want some good music, go listen to the LHC rap.
On that note, I'm going to go ahead and end this call, Sad. I really appreciate you calling. I've got to wrap up a couple things in the next few minutes. Feel free to call us again. And talk Ethan, but I do enjoy talking with you, sincerely, despite the fact that the thing that you're trying to make excuses for last week is abominable, but we can deal with that another time.
Sure. And I'd also like you guys to check out Coke Studio, on YouTube and the band Junoon from Pakistan. They're amazing. And they've been known as the U2 of South Asia. Should definitely check them out.
Send us a link because I'm not going to remember it and get it right now. But send us a link. And that reminds me, all of you people who are watching, you can always email tv@atheist-community.org. That goes to myself, the co-hosts, the people involved in other shows. And there are actually people dedicated to trying to answer as many of those emails as possible. So you may not hear from who you want.
And every episode has a blog post on the
on the AXP blog thing. Mark's probably way ahead of us and has it all up on the screen.
And that would be actually a good place to put that because that'll correlate with our show.
Yeah. On that note, I also want to thank everybody who donated so that I can go back to just a normal interaction with Jamie and Eric rather than having them try and lord this crap over
you're
me.
You're going to be trash talking those guys.
I won't. I will not do that.
Uh-oh. Here they come with bubbly.
They have brought in glasses. Oh my! I'm pretty sure I just paid for this champagne, but. Come around on the side where people can actually see you.
Yeah.
Because we only got a couple minutes left. So, as a reminder, we are all like great friends and love each other, but the people that we love more than us and these guys are those of you who are actually watching, those of you who call in. Yes, things are going to get heated on occasion. I'm going to screw things up. He's going to screw things up. Those guys screw things up maybe a little less than we do.
I've been on the air over 23 years, which is a pretty damn accomplishment.
Kudos to you for all those years. We will be at the American Atheist Convention. Actually,
I'm older than you.
Three of the four of us will be there this coming weekend, Easter weekend. Here's to hoping that your Friday is actually good and not just religiously good. And we'll see you all later. Cheers.
We were so close.
You guys think that was awesome?
Yeah. Fucking power play right there.
Did you think there was any likelihood you were going to hold it?